You're listening to Let's Get Legal, powered by Illinois State Bar Association and hosted by John Hansen. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Anna Krolikowska, Camden Law Office, and attorney Fred Augustin. Now, here's John Hansen, and let's get legal.
All right, everyone, a happy Saturday afternoon, 3:10 on this cloudy day. Yes, this is the start of a brand new show. It's called Let's Get Legal, where we take a look at the world news, the United States news, what's happening in your everyday life through a legal lens. Hopefully answer some questions, have some fun along the way. Thank you so much for listening. We'll take you right up till 5 o'clock. Iridian's across the glass. She's producing, and we still got folks in the newsroom keeping you abreast of everything that's going on. And we are powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, so no better way to start that with the president of the State Bar Association, attorney Anna Krolikowska. Thanks for joining us today, Anna.
My pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.
First guest ever. You a little nervous here?
No.
I didn't think so. You've probably faced more intense situations in a courtroom than here on the microphones.
I have.
Yeah. So tell us about the Illinois State Bar Association, because I think a lot of people think, oh, yeah, a lawyer passes the bar and then they're part of this group. But that's not the case here in Illinois.
Not quite in Illinois. So ISBA is a voluntary bar association, and that means that attorneys choose to join us, whereas in states like Wisconsin, they have mandatory bars. So in order to practice, you must belong. In Illinois, you get to make a choice.
And what does that choice bring you if you're part of the organization?
Well, you get the benefit of being a part of a great organization of 29,000 members, and we, as ISBA, work to assist attorneys in practice of law as well as promote improvements in the administration of justice. So that means we get involved with drafting and promoting legislation that impacts everyday people.
Mm-hmm.
We work on educating the public about the law, kind of like we're doing today.
Mm-hmm.
And supporting the courts and the rule of law.
That's great. You have a lot of accolades here on your list of accomplishments. Chicago Daily Law Bulletin's 40 Under 40 in 2019, and the salute of top 50 women in law in 2021. One of the first women to run the organization as president, right?
The fifth.
The fifth. That's still in the small handful, and hopefully more and more as we go on here.
Yes, let's hope so.
You have a really cool background yourself, emigrating from Poland in your teenage years, moving here to Chicago. At what point did you become interested in law?
Eighth grade constitution test, studying for that. I just got hooked.
A lot of people had a different reaction to their eighth grade constitution test.
But not the lawyers listening.
Do you think that's a similar thing? A lot of people at that moment were like, hey, this is something I want to do.
I think so. That interest in the law and how it impacts everyday matters and folks and how it can make a difference, and especially comparing it to countries where they don't have a constitution and the rule of law is not treated the same way as it is here.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, you came from an Eastern European background where different countries have gone through a lot of different things. So, I guess that you have a certain appreciation that a lot of Americans, we kind of take for granted.
Absolutely. I was actually born and lived in Poland until it stopped being communist and then moved here as a teenager. So yes, there's that appreciation.
Do you like the elements of family law for sort of the things you're talking about, the everyday laws that really impact families and doing what you can to help families navigate difficult situations?
Absolutely. Having an impact, being able to help people, and not just through the court system where the litigated cases take place, but also through mediation and collaborative process where some families choose to use those alternative dispute resolution methods to craft agreements and outcomes that are particularly suited to them.
Yeah.
So we have options.
I know a lot of people would think someone that handles a lot of divorce cases, why would you want to get into that? It seems like such a negative time for people. But of course, it can be an important and positive time for a lot of people, too. And I imagine, you know, it's not all what we see on sitcoms or we see on TV. It's a lot of important decisions that families have to make together that can end up as a net positive for people.
It can be, absolutely. And I felt like I could make a difference. In that moment, being able to say you have options, educating my clients so that they can make informed decisions, because the impact of divorce has ripples going through decades sometimes and impacting their children into adulthood.
Mm-hmm. At the ISBA, now that you're, you know, you're president, what are some of your goals here that you have during your term? How long does the term last, by the way?
So the term lasts a year.
Okay.
Initially, you run for third vice president, and then you move up into second, first, and then president.
Okay.
So I have the pleasure of serving as the 145th president of the ISBA.
Okay.
And the goals for this year are helping our attorneys practice and improve their business acumen so that they can have some help from us coming out of the COVID pandemic, which impacted all of us, but it also impacted attorneys, and majority of our members are solo and small firm practitioners. So we right. want to help them with their businesses.
Yeah.
We are also going to work on diversity, equity, and inclusion, on improving what we are doing internally at the ISBA, promoting more diverse involvement in our leadership, and also work and life and wellness balance for our practitioners and their families, because this is a very stressful and difficult profession. And if there's anything we can do to help our members and their families, we want to do that, especially now. Again, the last year has been so difficult for all of us.
For everyone. Yeah, I think people think law firms as these big, gigantic companies, and there are some, of course, but a lot of the people are just like everyone else here, trying to make it by. Anna K. Law is where you can find out more about her. Stay on board, though, because we're going to take a quick commercial break. You ain't going anywhere. We're going to talk a little bit more specifically about weddings, if you got wedding bells in the future, when to talk about that prenup conversation, and plenty more coming up here on WGN. 720 WGN. This is Let's Get Legal. I'm the host, John Hansen. This is all powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And I got to say, we've got the wonderful president in, Anna Krolikowska. And Anna, we got a text from a 219 number saying, my father was in the first graduating class after World War II from John Marshall Law School. He always spoke very highly of the Illinois State Bar Association.
That's Thank a nice, you for that.
Yeah, there we go. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to join the conversation. Okay, so in every aspect of life, the last 15 months has been a roller coaster, not a fun one particularly, but it's, you know, it impacts all of us in our everyday lives, going to the grocery store, our plans, stuff like that. But you talk about like major institutions coming to a grinding halt and trying to navigate this world. Man, the field of law, family law, what has the last 15 months been like for you guys?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So in Illinois, we've been very lucky in that Chief Justice Burke and the Illinois Supreme Court justices came out fairly early encouraging various districts and circuits to take a look at how we could continue to allow for access to justice, mm-hmm. because it's important and it's everyday matters that folks can't wait a year or a year and a half to address.
And when you say figure something out, like doing virtual stuff that hadn't been done in the past,
absolutely.
But instead of cameras, Zoom meetings like the rest of us?
Yes, absolutely. So in Cook County, Chief Judge Evans, and in domestic relations, Judge Dickler really came up with an idea of how we could continue to work. And there were some emergency matters that were allowed almost from the beginning, because you can't wait on orders of protection. There's someone's life at stake at mm-hmm. that point, potentially.
Right.
But with divorce cases, for example, we started coming back virtually in June and July and having status hearings, and initially then moving on to hearings and even being able to finalize case and prove up divorces. That's that final court appearance where the judge signs a judgment
right.
and says you're divorced.
Are you saying June and July of this year?
No,
or last
year.
Okay, so a couple months of
nothing. Sorry, I should have specified.
No.
About 3 months of nothing.
Yeah, so 3 months of nothing. But you talk about 3 months of nothing, the backlog that has created. So where are we at now?
We're still dealing with that backlog. And keep in mind that divorce case filings didn't stop. Generally, financial difficulties tend to create pressure and lead to more divorces. And we were seeing signs of more divorces coming to United States and China, because they dealt with COVID prior to us, and we were seeing increased percentages of new case filings. So yes, there's still a backlog. The courts are doing a tremendous job in trying to make up the time lost. And on the other side of that, folks like me who work with collaborative process and mediation, we were able to work with our clients outside of the court system, because collaborative process and mediation, you do the work in a series of meetings, virtual in this instance, mm-hmm. and then you file a case in the court system and you almost immediately schedule that final court appearance because you have your agreement ready.
You've done the legwork already.
Exactly.
So you said that mediation, what was the other one?
Collaborative divorce.
So this is the different types of divorce. Obviously
yes.
not for everybody, but who would benefit from something like that? And what are the pros of doing it that way? And how does it work?
Well, so it is done outside of the court system, and the couple first chooses to use that process. You can't order someone to use collaborative process. With mediation, if the case is going through the court system and there are children and children's issues, yes, a judge can order mediation, but people can also choose to do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And once they select that process, again, they would find attorneys who work in that process who help to guide them through that process and assist them in the process. And It is all done in a series of meetings, and you can bring in outside professionals. For example, in collaborative process, you can bring in mental health professionals whose job it is to act as coaches. So let's say we have a 1-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 13-year-old involved. Mm-hmm. Well, that mental health professional might be able to help the parents have a conversation in terms of how do we structure the parenting agreement and parenting time so it benefits all three children, rather than just taking a cookie cutter approach and saying you're going to do this, regardless of whether it's good for the 1-year-old or the 13-year-old.
Okay, so it comes up with a more specific plan, more tailored to the situation.
Exactly.
Who is are those situations where it's usually couples that, based on what you're the way you're detailing it to me, would seem are on a speaking manner. They have a little bit more. I don't know what the word is, but
amicable.
Yes.
Not always.
Okay.
Not always. Sometimes all it takes is that willingness to engage in that process. And at that point, we say, yes, we need those professionals. We need those mental health professionals to help us.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be a situation where it's a nice, easy, agreeable divorce, and that's why they're choosing collaborative. There have been some difficult cases. Folks who are dealing with mental health issues or addiction issues, to some extent, bringing in that mental health professional to help you outside of the court system might benefit the family more and might allow for, again, more tailored approach.
When is that decision on which divorce route you're going to choose done very early on?
Yes.
So they just come to you either as a couple or one individual, and they go to AnnaKLaw.com, they talk to you, and are you able to kind of navigate that world of just at least making that first initial choice?
Absolutely. That's the first thing I do in my initial consultations, explain the legal process, litigation, mediation, collaborative, and help them figure out, okay, what might work for me and my family? And then they figure out whether they want to have the conversation with their spouse, or maybe it's a situation where collaborative and mediation are absolutely not an option, and they will need to go the litigation route. But at least they have explored the possibilities, and they have the information that they need to make informed choices. That's very important to us in law, informed choices.
Mm-hmm. At least know what you're facing in either way. And then no matter what, you've even if it works out one way or the other way, at least you knew what you were getting into. So if there is someone out there that's listening, and it's been a rough past year or whatever the case may be, and they're considering getting divorced, what would you recommend for a spouse that really has that thought in their mind? Do they talk to a lawyer first? Do they talk to the spouse? How does that work?
I would talk to a lawyer first, and ideally someone like myself or myself who can speak about the three different approaches. So that way they start educating themselves before they have that conversation. It's not an easy conversation to have.
Yeah.
And it would help for them to have more of an idea, okay, what are my options? What am I willing to do? And then prepare for that conversation rather than just springing it and saying, I want a divorce, right?
Right.
And then what's going to happen.
Right, exactly. And be ready for it. An informed choice, exactly. Yeah. There. Let's talk about folks that are getting married.
Yeah.
We have so many weddings. I heard John Williams talking on Thursday on his show about people. I mean, especially if you're in that age, 25 to 35, thank goodness I just got out of that age, where you're going to like 10 in a year. Now it's even multiplied more than that because so many were in the backlog. That's still important conversation. So talking through a prenup, I know that's what a lot of people advise, getting it or not or whatever, but how do you have that conversation? Like, that's what I always want to know. My husband and I ended up not getting a prenup, probably because we didn't have the awkward conversation that people need to have through it. What's your recommendations for people?
Whether you choose to get one or not, I think there's value in having that conversation at the beginning of the process of planning your wedding, because you can talk through, are we on the same page money-wise?
Maybe not engagement night. Give it a couple days.
Yes, absolutely. Even more than that.
Okay.
But think about it. If you have the conversation early on and you start the lines of communication, are we on the same page in terms of savings? Are we on the same page in terms of when do we want to retire? Children, all of those important conversations, if you have them early on, that actually lessens the likelihood that you'll come back and see me for that divorce. So have the conversation. Here's advice from a divorce lawyer. Lines of communication. Keep them open and keep talking, because that's so critical.
If you're the spouse and your spouse approached you about it, though, is there ever that element of mistrust? Like, why is this person coming to me?
Yes, of course.
But shouldn't you as the spouse be like, oh, look, my spouse-to-be is thinking critically about what could possibly happen, right? That we should reward the spouses that come to the table with that conversation.
Well, so here are the situations where we definitely recommend having the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
There is a family or an existing business.
Mm-hmm.
there are children from a prior relationship, there are significant non-marital assets.
And you're saying that these are for sures or most likely.
Have the conversation. It's ultimately your choice whether to do it or not, but have the conversation and have it early enough, because with prenuptial agreements, they're contracts. And there are legal implications in terms of how you enter into that contract. So one, you need to give yourself enough time prior to the wedding to have the conversation.
Not you on know, a napkin at the wedding rehearsal the night before. Okay, that's not legally binding.
You know what? You don't want to take the chance of a judge 10, 15, 20 years down the road saying, no, there was no representation by counsel of each of the spouses. There was not sufficient financial disclosure, and you didn't give the other person enough time because they had just spent 6 months to a year planning this wedding. Mm-hmm. Everyone is invited, and you've spent, I don't know, $25,000, $50,000, whatever the amount is on this wedding, and there's that pressure on this person, if you don't sign, we're not getting married. So don't put yourself in that situation.
Yeah. What about for folks that have been divorced and they're kind of going through these years after divorce? Are there things that they should be aware of or think through as they go through the years after the divorce is finalized?
Are we talking in terms of possibly needing to come back to the court system or maybe to the collaborative process or mediation? Or are we talking prenuptial agreements for a future relationship?
Right. I think either one. I mean, I think that if someone's
yes
gone
to
through,
both.
Yes to both. Yeah. I guess it's a matter of like once you're done, is it you just slap the hands away? Or are there things that you need to be aware of moving forward?
Not always. So kids are going to get older, right? They're going to graduate high school. And at that point, you're looking at college expenses. And there might be financial considerations that are still, dragging on from the divorce, or sometimes maybe child support was not kept up with, or there is a change because there was a significant change in financial situation. You might need to, again, come back to the court system, or if you use collaborative process or mediation, come back to those processes. But the beauty of collaborative process is in that many instances, it improves the lines of communications so that our clients are better able to have these difficult conversations after the divorce without involving the professionals.
That makes sense.
Not a guarantee, just greater chance.
All right, we got about 30 seconds left. I want to ask, if people want to reach out to you, what are your areas of expertise? Why should people reach out to you?
So I actually can't say that I'm an expert. I can say that I focus my practice on collaborative divorce mediation and family law, and they can either go to annaklaw.com or reach me at 847-715-9328.
I learned a lot there in that conversation. It's important things to have. Look, difficult conversations are what they say. They're difficult, but they're important. They can save you a lot of headache in the long run if it's up to you. Come back again. I hope we'll chat more because I
would love to.
Yeah. And we can, during the commercial break, we were talking about a Middle Eastern relation. We'll have a whole other show on that. Or Eastern European.
Different show.
Different show. Yeah, okay. Anna K. Law, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, John.